Welcome to the Speak As Well As You Think podcast, brought to you by Vautier Communications. I'm your host, Jen Alex, and the goal of this show is to uncover communication strategies and behaviors that you can use to improve the way that you show up and perform at work. We'll talk about what effective communication looks like in action so that you can apply it to your own career. If you'd like a written summary of each episode, subscribe to our weekly email newsletter by visiting vautiercommunications.com. Welcome back to another Speak As Well As You Think podcast episode. And this week, we're going to be talking about our digital communication etiquette, some things we'd like to ensure that we do when we are communicating digitally, and obviously some of those things that we would like to try to avoid. So I want to start by talking about what changes we've seen over the last few years with more of a focus on that written communication because of the shift to either remote work with specific teams, maybe a full organization, or clients or customers. So John, let's go to you first. What are some of those recommendations or best practices that you see?
Jen, I think the two I'll focus on most for a do's standpoint would be being clear and concise with the writing. Mm-hmm. And I'll expand on that in a second. Second would be having a subject line that makes sense for the message. Mm-hmm. So when we think about both of those, clear and concise first, with, I would argue, an influx of what we'll call digital communication, just in the last 4 or 5 years, perhaps as a result of COVID, but I do think trending in this direction just over the last decade, more and more people needing to lean on writing emails effectively and using Slack and using Teams and all these other written forms or nonverbal communication pieces, getting your message across clear and then keeping it succinct are two massive pieces that everyone needs to incorporate, because reading audiences don't want to read more for the sake of reading more. And so this concept of make good use of my time, make me not have to work too hard to figure out what the point of the message is. And this way I can either understand it, which would be one purpose of writing, or act on it, which would be typically a second person purpose of writing. Second piece is that purposeful subject lines. And obviously here we're talking more about the email space, mm-hmm. but as we think about Outlook or any of the other email platforms that folks might use, readers are always going to look at two things first. One, who is it coming from? And two, what's the subject line? Yeah. Before they actually get to the body of the message, we can all agree those are the two things everyone looks at first in some order or the other. If we don't have a specific subject line or one that lends itself to help the reader understand what's about to be written and what the reader is about to take in, again, it's making it more challenging for the purpose of the message to get really understood. And so I think those are two easy do's that we should all be able to abide by. And it might take a little bit of adjusting to the practices that we're currently doing, but being mindful of those things should have an immediate impact in a positive way on how the messages are being received.
Yeah. And I think, John, we want to remember back to the three main things we're looking for within that written communication. First, we want to get it noticed. Second, we want to get it read. Third, we want to get it interacted with. So whether that is sending us back an email, whether that is tucking something away, filing something away, building something, whatever that might be, like you say, making sure that that's not said in a billion words so that they actually want to read that and that there's a clear-cut reason for them to actually open that up in the beginning of the day. I think that says wonders. I think one thing that we forget about is with the amount of digital communication we're seeing within that written format, whether it's Teams, Slack, iMessage, Outlook, whatever it may be, we're seeing a greater abundance of it, which mm-hmm. means the more that we see, the harder it is for us to figure out and weed out, hey, what is important to me? What is urgent? Because everything's coming through with those tags of high importance, high mm-hmm. urgency, that we have to be focused on how we give them that taste test. And we say, hey, this is what we're going to hear about. This is what we're going to dive deeper into. Give me that 30 to 45 seconds of your time. Because again, we want our 30 to 45 seconds to stand out to those individuals.
Yeah. And I think to your point, Matt, everybody listening, be very honest with yourself about that high importance. Is mm-hmm. your email or your message actually high importance? Meaning, is there a deadline coming up that is right around the corner? Has a client or customer reached out and said, "Hey, I'm so sorry. We need this information by end of day tomorrow," where it's that immediate ask. Is this some form, I'll call it a crisis, but it could be a fire you're trying to put out, but something you didn't anticipate that we need all hands on deck for immediately? Those are worthy of the tag high importance. Don't use the tag high importance simply because you want people to read your email before other people's, because it's almost like crying wolf. The more times you put that high importance on there, people read it and say, "That by no means was a high importance email at all." When they see it come through again, they're more likely to actually ignore it because they were frustrated with that tag the first time. That this time, if it truly is high importance, it might get pushed to that back burner.
Yeah, if you keep overusing that, all of a sudden the credibility of its use diminishes. And now people either disbelieve or they no longer think that your high importance is really genuine. And it's this idea of if everything is high importance, then all of a sudden nothing really is truly high importance.
Exactly. And I think when we consider, John, you mentioned clear and concise. Well, what exactly does that mean? Think about breaking up your written communication in a couple different ways. So as John mentioned, first having that subject line that makes sense for the information if it's an email form. Update is not super helpful. What is it an update on? Is this a new update, a continuing update? So be specific with some of that information without having to write three complete sentences in a subject line. And then when you think about the body or the bulk of your message, put that bottom line up front. Most important piece of information right at the very beginning. That way, as soon as somebody begins reading, they know exactly what to expect. Include whatever level of detail you think is necessary. And then the third piece would be having that clear call to action. If, as Matt mentioned, we want it to be interacted with, well, what does that mean? Do I need for you to respond? Do I need you to go and share this with your team? Do I need you to complete a task and then send it to the next person to complete? So being very clear with what you expect to happen, whether it's just an FYI or it's something that something needs to happen with, that needs to be outlined clearly at the end so that your reading audience knows, I've gone through this and now here's what I need to do.
Yeah, I'm going to throw my generation under the bus here for what we call brevity, because what my generation would refer to as brevity is shorthand text messages and less punctuation and shorthanded words and whatever that may be. This is something we see translating over to a lot of our work environments because, of course, who is our generation communicating with the most? Their parents, and their parents are the other half of that side of corporate America. We see this coming through a ton, and it begs the question that we want to ask ourselves. When we're writing an email, you always want to say, hey, is this how I would say it out loud? Give me a second to read this out loud and say, hey, if they were to phrase this in my voice, is this how I would want to come across? Is it too blunt? Is it too quick? Is there enough detail or information? Or is there too much detail or information? Does it sound robotic? Does it sound authentic? Again, just because it's written doesn't mean we need to sound like somebody that we're not. It doesn't mean we need to sound more professional or more to the point or anything of that nature. Again, we still want to be ourselves. I think that's a very big thing to remember with that brevity and focus portion there, Jen.
Yeah, great point.
Yeah. And I'll take that one step further, Matt. I think as I just listened to you share, sometimes writers forget to consider tone. And tone is such a misinterpretation when you're trying to read something through the written word because we can see it in real life. We see it in person. We see it on video calls. We see smiles. We see nodding. We see understanding, or we see the opposite of all those things. In the written word, I work with plenty of people who say, well, John, I'll just add more exclamation points. Not exactly professional and probably not ideal in some cases. John, what if I put this in all caps? Well, how would it read to you? I don't know. It kind of feels like shouting. Okay, then would that be the best move? Probably not. But it's considering all these little tiny things that can end up having a really profound impact on how that message gets received. So I do think that the message there's a do and a don't. Do consider tone. Don't overuse some of the AI out there because to your point, Matt, overusing AI and then copying and pasting certain things in, it no longer sounds like I'm interacting with Matt. And now tone has changed again because I'm trying to be overly professional, or the AI isn't me. And all of a sudden, people on the other end reading it are thinking to themselves, hang on a second, am I truly interacting with John? Because it doesn't exactly feel this way. And so you miss the mark on some of those pieces. We always encourage in our writing skills courses, read your message back out loud before you hit send. If it's a draft, read it back out loud before you hit file and save. But this way you get a nice understanding of how does this sound like, just from my perspective, listening. Anything that needs to get adjusted, make adjustments. But these can be the smallest things. If I'm writing a message, instead of just saying Jen, comma, open, maybe it's hi, Jen, or good afternoon, Jen, or happy Friday. It doesn't have to be anything lengthy. Obviously, again, be genuine, be authentic. But I was working with someone last year, and having looked at a lot of her messages that she was able to share with me in coaching, she said she was getting feedback that she was too curt. And so I said, I'd love to see some of the writing that would be described as being too curt. And she said, I don't think I'm coming across that way, but here's some things that I've sent recently. And every one of them was just the name of the person instead of hi. And I said, hey, really small, easy, low-hanging fruit adjustment we can make right out of the gates. Just incorporate a hi or a hello. Nothing lengthier than that. It doesn't have to be overdone. That can make a world of difference when someone opens it on their phone, opens it in their email, and thinks, okay, John's reaching out to me, and this is a polite greeting. And it's easy. It doesn't take a lot of work.
And I think that's one of those big things, is a lot more within that written environment goes on between the lines. It's we see it in our personal lives, we see it in our general relationships, our friendships, whatever it may be. Oftentimes, people may just misread a text or how we mean a word or how we mean something of that tone. So where we can minimize the between the lines is always going to be better for us. Again, keeping it to that point and making sure that we tell them what we need, what we're looking for, and how we're looking to accomplish that are typically going to be the best ways to go about it.
And I think that's an important point, Matt, because as you mentioned, the generations, for those generations that grew up with texting all of a sudden, which John and I would be the later part, we got a cell phone in probably mid high school that had texting capabilities. And so it was still pretty brand new to us. I think more of the nuances with texting probably started to come when we were closer to in college. But you'll hear people who will say something like, oh, wow, they must be mad. I got an okay with a period. And it's like, that's just proper written communication. If that were the only thing you were going to say and that was the end of your sentence, one would put a period. And so,
Or you pick up the phone and call that person and say, hey, Jen, are you mad at me?
right.
And Jen's like, no, why? Did you do something? Oh, no, I saw your text. It's like, again, miscommunication through tone or misinterpretation, perhaps through tone.
And that's
Exactly.
why, to Matt's point earlier, anytime you write for business, and again, maybe a Slack message or something like that can have a little more flexibility, but especially when it comes to an email, even if it's an email that's going to your team, you talk to them every single day. Anything more formal than that, obviously, always implement this. But anytime you're writing in a work environment, use proper technique. So, periods at the end of sentences and commas where they need to be. But that can help alleviate some of that miscommunication or misinterpretation, as John just highlighted it, when it comes to what we're used to in terms of our texting and how we read that. And when it comes to our business, if we have that clear distinction, I'm hopeful that you don't read a sentence with a period at the end and put this really negative tone to it. To John's point, you don't have to use six exclamation marks to show that this was a positive thing that I just shared with the group. So I think that's definitely something to keep in mind, especially when you are interacting with a variety of different generations in the workplace, which we all are pretty much on a day-to-day basis. The other thing I wanted to come back to was one of you had mentioned AI, and I'm a huge fan of AI. I think it's a great option. I don't want anybody listening to think that Vautier is against AI, but to whoever's point that was, you have to make it your own. So, a lot of times I might use AI if I'm creating a social post or perhaps writing an email that's just getting long-winded, maybe a first touch, kind of like a sales email. I'll write it in my verbiage And then I'll copy and paste it, open up ChatGPT and say, enhance this email. And then I paste what I've written into ChatGPT and it will give me, I mean, I can tell it, give me three versions of enhancing this email. And then I get to go back through and say, ooh, I really like this piece. They wrote it much clearer than I did. So I'm going to grab that piece and put it in. I might read another paragraph or a couple sentences that say, I would never say that out loud. I would never say that in a casual conversation, in a business meeting. I wouldn't write it. So I'm not going to use that one. But this allows you to pick and choose. It gives you another perspective on, I'm trying to spit this out. It's not coming out clear, or it's really muddled, or a lot of detail here that's making it confusing. Sometimes an AI platform does allow it to give you a much more succinct version that you say, couldn't get that on my own. Really like this one.
Yeah, it's a balance. It's a balance like anything else, but I think if you put all your eggs in the AI basket, it's a
Absolutely.
disadvantage. And if you never choose to use it, you're leaving something to be desired, or you could be leaving a different perspective. And that's where there's a give and a take. And obviously, those listening who have been engaged with us before, we use AI often in our coaching sessions in various degrees. But it's not the only thing we rely on, nor do we ever encourage ignore it altogether, because it's not you. It's technology or a computer doing the thinking for you. I really truly think it's a balancing act.
I agree there. And then, Matt, I think earlier you mentioned brevity. I want to touch just a little bit more on that and expand because, to your point, extremely important. And one of the things that I always like to tell clients, especially in our business writing skills program, when we're working on that specifically, think about how many emails, messages, texts, whatever form of written communication you're getting on a daily basis. The last thing you want is either more. Or ones that are longer that you have to either go back and reread multiple times in order to understand the point, or you get, John sends me four emails in a row of the exact same thing, fixing any errors or adding something in that he forgot because he was perhaps rushing through it. So I think brevity, it takes time to be brief and it takes time to do it in a way that is as clear as possible, only includes what we called and labeled before the need to know information, not extra nice to know. But I think it's something that I really encourage everybody to take the time to do it well and do it right the first time.
Yeah, and I think branching off of that brevity piece is how we make those emails seem short to our audience. I
Yeah.
think in today's generation, the general attention span is just, it's shorter, and that's very okay. It has to do with the social media that we're taking in and the short form content and those types of things. But that leads over to when people get an email that is one mega paragraph with 45 sentences in it, nobody wants to look through that, and they're not really going to be able to stomach that and actually pull pieces out of it in terms of reading comprehension. What we teach is a big art that we like to call the art of the one sentence paragraph. It's okay to have one sentence in a paragraph. If that's all that you have to say there, and you're changing to a new topic, a new point of view, a new thought process, put that into a new paragraph. That's where your audience or your reader is going to know that you're taking a step aside to get deeper into the information. Again, this is going to work out significantly more positively as well. It's going to help accomplish those three things we talked about at the beginning, mainly getting it read, because people are going to want to stay with it until the end, seeing it being more digestible, more manageable, and getting them to interact with it, because by the end, they're going to understand what we're asking of them, which is a massive thing that we lose the longer and longer and longer that these emails get.
Yeah, and I think going alongside that, Matt, you do have to avoid, I'll put another in the don't category, being too brief.
Exactly.
Right? A bunch of one sentence paragraphs in an email might not exactly get the job done. For the same reason, if you ask a question and you get a one word response, you might think, can I get a little bit more? Or I might need a little bit more to better understand that. And so, just as I mentioned with AI, I do think it's a balancing act. I don't want people confusing more with better. But take a big look at the big picture of the message and think to yourself, is this enough? You want to be thorough, of course, when you write, to eliminate some of that back and forth, because I think that could be a double-edged sword of writing, is People think, oh my gosh, the more I do this, I just have to keep responding, keep responding, keep responding. Going to the comment that Matt made, if you really balance that art well, it should make more efficient methods or modes of communication, not the opposite.
Exactly. And you said it at the beginning was there's a big difference between the need to know and the nice to know, and that's one of those minimum qualifiers is we have to have all of the need to know information. If we're cutting out that need to know information, we just simply don't have enough.
Yeah, and you're ineffective on the opposite side, not because you buried information, but because you didn't provide enough that people read it and say, I have no idea what I just read. This
Yeah,
doesn't make any sense to me.
that's where you get the 4 or 5 questions on the background or the back and forth with the 20 question email chain, all of those things that again just end up turning to white noise.
All right, so some great conversation around some of those best techniques or do's and don'ts when it comes to our written communication. If we think about the three goals we have in writing that Matt outlined at the beginning, we want our written messages to be noticed. We want them to be read, and we want them to be interacted with. When we think about the do's and don'ts for each of those, when we think about being noticed, we want to focus on those good subject lines. Clear, it points to what the purpose of this written communication might be. The don't would still be around that subject line. You don't need to write 4 complete sentences, but you can't have one word because that's not enough information to tell your audience what it is they're going to read. On the read side, you want to make sure that your writing is clear and concise, and visually it looks appealing for your readers to look through. You don't want to give them a reason to open it up and say, nope, I don't have time for that. And then on the don't side, make sure it's not a massive paragraph or it's not just simply 3 one-liners. You want to make sure you're authentic in this is how I would communicate if we were talking face to face or having a conversation. And then on the interacted side, make sure you have that clear call to action. And then on the don't, just be aware that you aren't marking everything that you send out as a high importance so that people don't start to ignore that. This is an ever-changing space. We will continue to learn more and more about that written communication side as more AI techniques come in. As newer protocols come out and different organizations use different platforms, but it's something that we can continue to fine-tune and shift as those changes start to come. So this will hopefully provide a good starting point for you all to continue making your writing as clear and concise as possible. As always, if you have another topic you would like to hear us discuss, reply to our weekly newsletter and we will be sure to get that in the rotation. Thanks so much and see you next month.
Thanks for listening to the Speak As Well As You Think podcast brought to you by Vautier Communications. Again, I am your host, Jen Alex. Vautier Communications is in the business of business communication skills. We coach and train both individuals and groups on how to elevate their presence and increase their impact through the way they communicate, present, and write. If you want to learn more about our in-person or virtual training options, visit our website at www.vautiercommunications.com. Thanks for listening.